We trust that you will be inspired, helped, and impacted by this message recorded at Bridge.
Listen, I have the great privilege of traveling a fair amount, and I see something quite amazing, really, all around the world, no matter where I've been, all over America to Asia, across Europe, and the one thing I still see quite prevalent, no matter where I go, in every context I go, is that there's the same pattern with men. And there are two extremes with this one pattern that I see in most men around the world. It doesn't matter where you go, you probably will have experienced it before, but you'll find that there are men who are quite comfortable with where they are and quite comfortable to be average. And you'll go like, how's that weird? I mean, how weird is that? How weird is it to come across a guy who's just quite comfortable to be average? You know, like I've got an average job, but at least I've got a job. I'm of average health. At least I'm sort of healthy. I'm average in my income, and you know, at least I've got some form of income. And as long as I can get to work around 9 and get home around 4, well, you know, that's okay. It's you know, like, you know, that's good value. You know, I don't have to do any more than that. Then you get in the other extreme, on the flip side of that same coin, men who are completely driven by their idea of success, so much so that they have become obsessed with achieving whatever their level or idea of success looks like, and they will stop at nothing at all to achieve that goal. They neglect their families, they neglect their children, they are consumed with the idea of some form of success, whatever that context might be. Both extremes, however, are such a dangerous place to be, because both of them prevent those individuals from stepping into their God-given potential. Now, somewhere in the middle is where we should be. We should be driven, we should be motivated, we should have some form of ambition, but not at all costs. Likewise, we should also be content with what God has given us, but not to the extent of comfort and pleasure as being the only measure. And if we don't, if we live in these extremes, we don't live out our potential, which is ultimately to empower others and to help others succeed. Ultimately, we become completely starved of friendships, we become starved of intellect and wisdom, and we fade away as blobs, possibly with a beer in our hands. And that becomes repulsive to everyone around us. Most of us know this, don't we? Most of us know someone in your life. There's someone in your life, guaranteed. Hopefully it's not a family member, but maybe you have someone in your life who is absolutely, completely uninspiring. Like, if someone said you'd spell uninspiring, you'd use that person's name. Filled with potential, filled with opportunities, filled with the capacity to be better or bigger, yet they don't. They're quite comfortable not to even attempt to be successful. Then you know someone whose aggression and forcefulness and dogmatism fills the room like the stench of sulfur. Rotten eggs. And when that person walks in the room, there's like everyone around like visibly changes. Like, whew. And those are the two extremes that we see. Maybe you know a family member like that. Maybe you have a friend like that or a boss like that. For heaven help us. And if you don't know anyone like that, well, maybe you're that person. Don't nudge the person next to you if they're a family member. The reason we get into these extremes is because we're not self-aware. And it's important for us to start looking at our lives, gents. And self-reflection is quite an important process. And my mentor is a man in his, he's almost 70 actually. And when we have a long conversation with him around life, he always says this, and he's the only person in the world that calls me young. I'm quite grateful for it. He says to me, young man, listen, and I mean, I'm like, yes, that's so cool. I'm young, but I'm 46, but he's 70, so I'm young to him. He's like, look at this little kid, and I love it, eh? And he'll say to me, what you've got to understand, the older you get, the more urgent you become. And he says, as you start getting older, you start to realize how short life is. And you keep looking back, going, oh my word, I didn't achieve as much as I thought I would. I haven't accomplished as much as I wanted to. And he said to me that there's an acute awareness of the shortness of life. And that's an important principle that I try and instill in young leaders that I'm raising, that your life is shorter than you think it is. and urgency matters. And if we don't assess ourselves, and if we don't review who we are and what we're about and what we stand for and the values that we're developing, all of those things, we start to live a limited life that prevents us from being effective. And if we exist in the extreme of being completely uninspiring and lacking purpose to being so driven by it that we repulse everyone, we still fall short of what God wants us to do, because our influence is limited. And influence is limited. This is important. If you're uninspiring, you're not going to influence people. If you're repulsive, you're not going to influence people. And the problem with that is that if it was only your life that mattered, who cares? Then, you know, fade away. Do what you want to do. But this is not what God calls us to do. In fact, God has called each and every one of us, in particular as men. Now listen, I'm not removing this importance from women either. But as men, every man in this room, whether you're a 14-year-old young man growing into a man, or whether you're 95 in this room today, the purpose still remains true for each of us. Our job, God called us as men to take control of things. To take control of our habits, to take control of our environments, to lead, to and I'm not talking about a dogmatic kingship abusing and hurting people. I'm talking about having the right attitude towards making life better for yourself, and not just yourself, for everyone around you. We are called to be a positive influence. Look at this, 1 Peter 2 verse 12. This is important. Peter talking to people, to in particular men, teaching them how to live their lives. He said this: be careful how you behave among your unsaved neighbors. Look at that phrase. Be careful how you behave. Gents, be careful how you behave. Your behavior is directly correlated to the effectiveness of your influence. Be careful how you behave. This is important. For then, if they are suspicious, talking about unsaved people around you, are suspicious of you and talk against you, they will end up praising God for your good works when Christ returns. Be careful how you behave. Because when we behave the right way, our influence is positive and we see the right outcome. Here's one of the dilemmas we have as fathers. Our kids don't do as much as we say as much as we do. And we start to see that replicated. That's why can I just remove this? If you believe in generational curses, please turn that off in your head. There is no such thing. Different lesson, different day. Not going to get into it today. Generational curses do not exist. They were refuted, removed, destroyed. Jesus destroyed them. In fact, they were destroyed in the Old Testament too. So if you go, well, my life's a mess because my great-grandfather did something. No, you're a mess because you did something. Okay. There are no such thing as generational curses. There are generational choices. And those generational choices happen when we mimic those who have led the way before us. Here's the problem. Your bad choices are going to spill over to your children. Be careful how you behave. Be careful how you behave. Why? Write this down. Take notes. If you don't take notes, gentlemen, you are not going to be effective. You won't man up, you'll man down. Here's an important thing to say. Everything about you says something about you. Write that on your smartphone, take a pic. I don't care how you do it, get this into your head. Everything about you says something about you. When the way you speak to your wife shows your children how you value women. The way you dress tells your children what an appropriate dress code looks like. How hard you work, the positive attitude in difficult circumstances, everything about you, the way you comb your hair or cut your hair, the way you grow your beard, the way you speak to strangers, the way you speak to people from different race groups, all of that shapes your children. It shapes people around you because everything about you says something about you. So when you are in a space of any context, your influence is shaped by how you behave. This is an important thing. Christianity, following Jesus, is not a behavioral modification process. It's a heart transformation. And it means that if we are going to see our lives change, there are some virtues that we need to adopt. Very important, very helpful virtues that we need to establish. And that's why today's message is called Maximizing Your Influence. Maximizing your influence. How are you and I going to maximize our influence? Because whether we like it or not, we are influencing people. Every one of us in this room is influencing someone. The difference is either it's intentional or it's unintentional. The other question is that influence positive? Are we taking people and inspiring them and motivating them to become better, or are we setting an example that will draw them into darker places? So we need to look at the fact that we need to maximize our influence. A couple of values that I'm going to talk about today really quickly, and then we're going to bring the panel up. Here it is. The psalmist in Psalm 112 lists virtues that are really, really, really important. Now, when you talk about virtues and you talk about values, sometimes us as men get a little bit uncomfortable because it's touchy-feely and it's not rah-rah-ree. It's a little bit, this is a discussion for the girls, right? But the thing that I want to bring across to you today is these virtues qualify us as positive influences. In fact, if we don't adopt these virtues, it's a matter of time before our relationship with God deteriorates and we just walk away from Him. And if you don't believe in God today, if you're not a follower of Jesus today and you're just here because a friend told you to come out and have coffee with you, well, I'm glad you're here. And these virtues will help you, irrespective of what you believe about Jesus or God. They are a great set of values that you can espouse in your life. They will help you too. So this has got nothing to do with forcing you to follow Jesus. This is about giving you some virtues and values that will help you to be a better influence in every context. You okay? Look at the person next to you and say, I want to give you a virtue. Look at the person on the other side and say, hey. Psalm 101. Oh, I said 112. Psalm 101. Are you all okay? Psalm 101 verse 2. Are you ready? It'll come up on the screen. I will try, the psalmist speaking, I will try to walk a... So now shout out with me. I'll try to walk a blameless path. I'll try to walk a blameless path. But. Now there's always a but. Always a but. Each of us has a but there's always a but. I will try to walk a blameless path, but I need your help, especially in my home. What we do at home shapes every area of our lives. Because we can paint any picture we like to those who are not close to us. We can put the facade of happiness, the facade of wealth, the facade of comfort, the facade of meaningful existence, but at home is where the meat is brewed. It's where the meat of our lives is shaped, and what we do at home spills over to everything. Let me say this differently. What you do when no one is looking shapes who you become. What do you do when no one's looking? What do you read when no one's looking? What do you watch when no one's looking? What do you do with your time when no one's looking? I've tried to walk a blameless path, but I need your help, especially in my own home, where I long to act as I should. Help me to refuse the low and vulgar things. Help me to abhor all crooked deals of every kind. That includes not paying the tax man. Very quiet today. The men are like, uh-uh. Paying tax is not dependent on whether the tax man does a good job with the tax or not. God wants us to do what's right, irrespective of whether we agree with what they're doing is right. God's not going to judge us on what the government does with our taxes. But He will judge us with what we do with the money we should have given to the tax man. So putting into perspective, some of you are going, okay, I'm not coming back to this church. They love SARS. No. Just to clarify something. Pay the least legal amount of tax possible. That's called wisdom. Help to refuse the low and vulgar things. Help me to abhor all crooked deals of every kind. Don't take bribes. Don't pay bribes. To have no part in them. I will reject all selfishness and stay away from every evil. I will not tolerate anyone who secretly slanders his neighbors. Slander means gossip about or criticize. I will not permit conceit and pride. I will make the godly of the land my heroes and invite them to my home. Only those who are truly good shall become my servants. Who you employ matters. But I will not allow those who deceive and lie stay in my house. My daily task will be to ferret out criminals and free the city of God from their grip. Wow. Let's tackle it quickly. You ready? Look at this. There's a critical starting point. If you and I are going to maximize our influence, there's a critical starting point. Here it is. Maximized influence starts with self. If you want to be a positive influence to your children, to your people around you, to your friends, family, to those in the organizations you lead, start with self. You have to start with self. Socrates, the philosopher, said this, "Let him that would move the world first move himself." It starts with that. If we want to live a blameless path, it means that we've got to watch how we become, how we live, how we lead, how we speak. We've got to put disciplines into our world. Leadership and influence always starts with self. If you cannot lead yourself, you will never lead others. In fact, you may be able to lead others for a while, but you'll end up leading them down the wrong path. If you want your kids to have great values, but you're struggling to see why they don't have those values, gents, maybe it's because we don't espouse them. Yes, teenagers rebel. But if we have modeled the right values for long enough, the rebellion is short-lived. If we are not modeling those things, we see that rebellion increase only because we are not managing self. We need to manage ourselves. We need to hold the right values dear. Now, there are eight values, eight virtues that we need put into place. Here they are. Number one, avoid all forms of vulgarity. We live in a vulgar, charged world. Everything we see is about propagating the very things that are the antithesis of who God is and expects and wants of us. Now again, if you're not a follower of Jesus today, you might go, that's the reason I don't love Jesus, because he's got all these rules and regulations that wreck us. No, the problem is the rules and regulations are not rules and regulations at all. In fact, what God puts in place for us are called boundaries. And each and every one of us in this room are very grateful for boundaries. In fact, you are alive today because of boundaries. In fact, if you drove on the highway today, it's because of boundaries that you're alive. Because if that white line down the middle of the highway didn't exist, someone would drive into you. The boundaries matter. In fact, that you're alive today because the boundaries of our nation say you shall not murder someone. So when you're having a bad day, or someone that you work with has a bad day, they can't just walk up and shoot you. Bah! You're dead. There's a boundary. Now the problem is when we look at our lives, we say, well, I want pleasure and comfort to be the foundation of my life. And Jesus has put boundaries around it saying, no, 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 if you have too much comfort, you will die. A miserable, uncomfortable, falling apart life. The question is, why are there boundaries? Those boundaries are there to guide us. Avoid all forms of vulgarity. What is that form of vulgarity? It could be coarseness, rudeness. It could be tastelessness. It could be bad comments. It could be demeaning women. It could be being racist and demeaning other race groups. It could be all sorts of stuff. Gents, can I encourage you? The person who works in your garden is not your boy. Don't use that phrase around me. I don't care if you're 7'9". I will still tell you, hey, you're racist. Yes. The lady who works in your house is not the girl. The person who works in your garden is your gardener. And if you're uncomfortable with how the gardener works in your garden, train him or her. Spend time. Yeah, but what do you want me to do? No, no, put them on a horticultural course. Very quiet now. Isn't it amazing when we start thinking things through that we use phrases and words that have just become accustomed to? Come on. Avoid all forms of vulgarity. Treating people, demeaning people as vulgar. Number two, avoid all forms of unethical behavior. Unethical behavior, oh my goodness, get rid of unethical behavior. What is unethical? Well, you have to think that through. Can I just encourage you today? Stop believing the lie that there's something called business ethics. There are no such thing as business ethics. There are just ethics. If you're ethical at home, you'll be ethical in business. If you're ethical with the way you treat your taxes, you'll be ethical with how you receive money. If the policeman pulls you over for you speeding, thank him for doing his job. You'll blow him away. He may even let you off. I'm not speaking from experience at all. The last fine I got, I did. I said to the policeman, thank you so much for pulling me over. I was speeding. He goes, what? He goes, yeah, you were. I go, I know. I said, I'm so sorry I was speeding. And then I said to him, actually, to be very honest, I can't lie. I'm a pastor. I'm actually not sorry I was speeding. I don't always follow the speed limit. He said, you shouldn't be telling me this, sir. I said, I know, but you've pulled me over. So how much fine do I need to give? Do I deserve? He goes, he went like this, genuinely, he went, ish. He says, you're the first person that hasn't argued with me. I think you should just go and speed and don't speed anymore. I said, okay. I'd like my wife to learn the lesson. She collects fines. You know, like kids? Kids collect like playing cards or marbles. Nikki finds. It's like once a week almost. And it's not as bad as that. And she's not in the room. If she was in the room, I wouldn't tell you this story. She's Greek. I'm not stupid. Avoid all forms of unethical behavior. Treat people with respect. If you do something wrong, take it on the chin. Take the responsibility. Immoral, undisciplined, selfish gain will always cause us to be unethical. Look at this one. Number three, avoid selfishness and blame casting. Ah, this is my pet peeve. Oh, I hate it. If you get something wrong, yes, I got it wrong, I'm sorry. But we like the real Slim Shady. It wasn't me. Don't you hate it with your kids? Like let's say you've got two kids. One is at school, at a school function. The other one's at home. You haven't been to the fridge. You go into the kitchen and the bottle of milk is not put back. And you say to your child that's home, please put the milk away. Wasn't me. Like, but we do that in the workplace. When our customers correct us for poor service delivery, we try and find a reason why it's not really our fault. When our wives get upset with us, we try and put the blame back on our wife. Yes, that might be true, but you. If you want to have more sex, married men, this is going to help you. It's going to check. If this is all you learned today. If you're married, come on, it's a men's meeting, right? If you're married and you like sex, shoot your hand up. Now come on, keep your hands up. Keep them up. For those of you with your hands raised, just use this word. Two words. Powerful words that will get you a lot more sex. I'm. It's powerful stuff right there. The other one that'll help is yes, dear. But don't do it with disdain. Because then the first one's also wrecked. It's all over. Don't blame people. If you want your marriage to work, don't blame your wife for all the things she does wrong when she's fighting with you about the things that she thinks you've done wrong. Take it on the chin, accept it, and change. Then later, when it's a different moment, with the right attitude and no emotion, then you can perhaps gently address some of the things that you're unhappy with. But in the middle of the context, what we do is we make it an emotion. You said, and I did, and you did that, and that's why I did this, and it's all your fault. And yeah, just go, you know what, honey, listen, try this. Try this tonight. Just go home and say, babes, you know what? I just want to tell you something. I'm sorry. For what? For everything I've ever done, I'm sorry. You're amazing, and sometimes I'm an idiot. I'm sorry. In fact, if I were you, I would have my WhatsApp out and be sending that message right now. And then another one at about 3, 2, 3, another one at 4, maybe something else nice at 7, and then send your kids away. If you're single and not married, none of that's applicable to you. Keep your zip up. Are you all okay? Number 4, avoid arrogance. Remain teachable. Avoid arrogance. Remain teachable. If you're not teachable, you will not grow. The mark of leadership is teachability. Number 5, avoid all forms of gossip and criticism of others. Oh my greatness, stop, don't criticize. And I know it's difficult when we watch the Proteas and we think, oh my word, could they be any worse? But the problem is, with that statement, is that none of us have even made the team. So we may be able to criticize them while we're holding our DSTV remote in our hand, but the reality is none of us are good enough to make the team. Well, maybe there is someone who wants in the room once played for the Proteas. Well, good luck. Well, then you're not on the team anymore. Maybe you suck now. I don't know. But are you okay? But if you can't criticize if you haven't been there. Isn't it amazing how we criticize our bosses by the way they treat us at times, but when we're in the position, we go, oh, I know why they did that now. It's amazing. It's like before we've got children, we tell everybody how to raise their children until we've got children. We're like, oh. You okay? If you're 45, you've never been 60. Stop telling the 60-year-olds how to live their life. They've been 45. And they've done it well because they've made 60. Yeah? You're good? Look at the person next to you and say, I'm ready. For number six. Oh, I've got 2 fives on my note. There's not eight, they're nine. Sorry. Number five. The second five on my notes. Build close friendships with godly people who add spiritual value to you. This is an important virtue. It's okay to have friends. In fact, it's good to have friends who don't know Jesus. Please, for goodness sake, men, connect with people who don't know Jesus. Please, please do that. Connect with them, meet with them, add value to their lives. Don't tell them, don't beat them with your Bible. Just tell them how much you care for them and that you'll do what you need to do for them. Guide them on a path, give them wisdom, give them direction. Pray for them, don't let them know you're praying for them. Don't be weird, don't be a spook. Connect with ungodly people, that's great. But you cannot have those same people as your close friends. Because if you have them as your close friends, they will drag you down and you will need a person later to fix you again. You need to have your close friends, the people in your tight-knit circle, to be people that are spiritual, God-fearing, God-lifting, God-admiring, God-worshipping people who will take you to the next level. Number seven, employ people based on character, not competence. Most of us will employ people based on their competence and then wonder why our organization is dipping in moral standards. Look first for character. When you're interviewing, ask character-focused questions. We ask questions like this. Well, tell me what you've done for the last 5 years. Rather say this. What are the four things that you've done that are completely immoral in the last week? Because now you're working on character. Justin was talking to our team recently, and he spoke about a quote. Justin Borshoff on our team, he used a quote that I've heard many before, and I forgot about it. He said this: "We employ on competence, but fire on character." We all do that. We employ people for their competence, but fire them because of character. Switch it around. Employ them for character and train the competence. So you're all okay? Eight. Don't entertain those who are of questionable character. Don't bring people over to your home who are completely and utterly morally bankrupt. Because that will spill over to your wife, to your kids, to your other friends. Why would you do that? Don't have people in your close circle that have character flaws. These will help you. Number nine, be an advocate for godliness, ethics, and adding value. Said differently, make a stand for Jesus. Make a stand for Jesus. Put yourself in a position where you will always uphold the name of Jesus without using his name. So I think it was Spurgeon who once said this, the great English author, writer, and minister in the hundreds of years ago. Can't remember where he lived. He said this: the best way to change lives is to hold a newspaper in one hand and the Bible in another. And then he said this: preach the gospel always and use words if necessary. The way we live our lives will maximize our influence. You being helped today? And the last thought is this. We looked at there's a critical foundation, and that is that we need to manage self. We've spoken about those virtues, but here there's something else. There's critical support needed. We need God's help. The psalmist says this, that he lists all of these virtues. He lists them all, but he started off by saying this, I need your help. None of us will be able to implement or develop or espouse those virtues without the help of God. And it starts there.
Thank you for listening to this message today. We pray God's best for all areas of your life. For more information or more resources, please visit bridgechurch.org.za.